You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
This year marks the 50th anniversary of the Studio Glass movement in this country. And to celebrate, the Corning Museum of Glass has taken its state-of-the-art mobile glass-blowing studio on the road. The Glass Lab, as it's called, has taken up residence on Governor's Island for the month of July, presenting free glass-blowing performances every weekend, pairing the museum's master glass-blowers with designers from the Cooper Hewitt Museum's exhibition Graphic Design, now in production also on the island, to create unique works of art in glass. And I'm very pleased to welcome one of those glass-blowers, Eric Meek, and designer Harry Allen to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
Thank you.
Eric, how long have you been blowing glass?
I've been making glass about 20 years now.
And how do you learn that skill? Are there schools, or do you have to start as an apprentice?
Well, you know, years ago there may have been an apprenticeship program, but today most people who learn to make glass have actually learned at university art school
really?
Programs. Yep.
You take glass blowing 101?
That's right, yeah. You can take a class in glass blowing just like you could in Russian literature or anything else.
How long does it take to become proficient?
You know, you can be making nice objects after, a few years.
A few years.
Well, if I took you into the studio, though, we can make something in a couple of weeks. But to be able to make things consistent and consistently nice, it takes a lot of practice.
Well, because you got to get to the exact right temperature.
Well, temperature is definitely the key in glass making because it's always changing. It's very dynamic, so you have to learn to read the material.
I knew a trombonist who was also a glass blower. Are the skills similar? Do you have to develop an embouchure?
Nope. It's actually really easy to inflate glass, easier than blowing up a balloon.
Harry, what kinds of things do you design?
You know, I design a wide variety of things from – I actually do some interior work, but I'm a product designer by training. I do packaging, furniture, lighting, really wide variety of work. Across many different materials.
And when did you start thinking about designing stuff with glass?
I think it's such a fascinating material. I think it's always sort of in the back of your mind as a designer. It's something that you would love to work with.
So if you, do you just look in the Yellow Pages for a glass blower?
Early on, I actually did that and found some people out at Urban Glass to make some glass pieces for me when I needed them, but you can hear what the skills are involved. So I couldn't do it myself. You know, I could never do it myself. So you always would have to find someone else who could help you execute something in glass.
Do you or other designers think up something you'd like to make in glass and then show your design to a glass blower and say, this is what I want?
That's a rare opportunity. And that's actually why Glass Lab is such an amazing you have that opportunity. The museum, the Corning Museum of Glass, enables you to work with a master glassblower. So,
did they often send you out on the road, Eric?
Well, we've done about half a dozen deployments with Glass Lab over the last 5 years. The Corning Museum of Glass also does other mobile glass working deployments, but Glass Lab, we probably do one or two a year.
Is the kind of collaboration I just talked about with Harry between glassblowers and designers traditional in glassmaking?
It is, yeah. It's very traditional. So a typical factory years ago, you would have had designers and you would have had glass artists. The difference with Glass Lab, though, is that, you know, we bring maybe designers who wouldn't normally have access to a glass facility right into the process.
But I'd imagine that you'd also just want to do your own designs.
Many glass artists do, but the wonderful thing about working with designers is they bring a fresh perspective to it. So, you know, as a glassmaker, a lot of times you don't really give yourself the latitude to just be creative. And if someone else is coming to you with these designs, you know, what we say in Glass Lab is whatever it is, we'll make it. You know, even if we know it might not be possible, we'll make it and just see what happens.
So that's a problem, I'm assuming. A designer who's never worked with glass before brings you a design. There are all sorts of technical challenges. It's kind of like a composer who's writing for the violin, although he's never played for the violin. Do you have to explain, we can't do it that way, we have to do it another way?
Well, again, you know, part of the reason we do Glass Lab is to let the designers see that and then understand better through witnessing what happens, the process, you know, the nature of glass, the way it flows and moves. And, you know, that's really where the discovery comes.
So, Harry, was learning what glass can do part of the process for you as a designer?
Oh, yeah, very much. It's well, A, often I'm not asking them to do as much as they can do. And then I'll go in with a bunch of sketches. We'll go through them together. They're fascinated by things that I'm not necessarily, or parts of things that I've brought, and we'll go through the drawings, select the ones that get made, and then it's you watch it come into being, and there's a bunch of trial and error. So it's a very interesting process and really informative, and you learn a lot through it.
What was the first project you brought to Glass Lab?
I came armed with a few the first time. I have a whole line of products that I make that are all cast from real life, and the first time I went in, I had this idea to make a change dish of some sort. We didn't really know what it was going to be in the beginning, but that was cast using coins. So what I brought with me was a big bunch of coins that I had collected during travels and a wok. And so we lined the wok with all of the coins, and then we didn't know how it was going to turn out, but it actually worked out great. They blew a big bubble into the wok, and then eventually the bubble was cut in half, so it became a bowl, and the whole bottom of it was lined with the impression of coins and things.
So. Well, on the Corning Museum website, there were videos of you working on glass wishbones and glass waffles. We have a link to that, along with a link to we have a slideshow as well on our show page. How did those glass waffles turn out?
Pretty cool. It was I'm always looking for things to cast in my work, and this one came about sort of almost in the reverse, because I was thinking, well, the idea is that they might eventually become trivets. I always start out with that there's some function. I'm a designer, not an artist. But and so what I thought of was that the waffle iron is very much like a glass mold. It's a metal mold, basically. And so then I presented the idea to Eric, like, do you think this would work? I went out and collected a bunch of old waffle irons, and then I brought them to them.
And then you made waffles out of glass?
We did, yeah. We cast hot glass in a waffle iron just like you pour batter in it.
When you're coming up with an idea, do you think, boy, I'm going to give Eric or one of the other glassblowers a hard time with this one?
Well, the funny thing about it is you never know which ones are going to be hard and which ones are going to be easy. And the waffles were actually anticlimactic because they were so easy. It just the waffle iron is a mold, and we were banging them out, and then after a while we were like, wow, this really works, you know, and we were almost in production with them before, whereas some of the ideas are very labor intensive and there's a lot of trial and error, and we're discussing how it's going to be done, and they have so many technical aspects that they need to work out.
And Eric, when somebody comes to you with something, do you know immediately whether this is going to be a difficult one or an easy one?
Yeah, absolutely. You always relate it to things that you've already done, and you can tell if it's going to be a hard one, but yeah, you forge ahead no matter what.
I'm talking with glassblower Eric Meek, who is currently has set up shop temporarily at Governor's Island in a mobile glassblowing studio. He is joined in our studio by designer Harry Allen. So what does the mobile glass studio consist of?
So we took all of the essential elements of a studio, and we put them, in the case on Governor's Island, they're actually on a semi-trailer, and we pulled the semi from Staten Island onto a ferry, drove it out, or took a boat and a barge out past the Statue of Liberty, down by the tip of Manhattan, and onto Governor's Island. So this mobile unit we can set up just about anywhere, open it up, warm up the furnace, and be blowing glass.
Because it's pretty big. You've got a glass melting furnace there. What kind of fuel does it run on, and how hot does it get?
On Governor's Island, we're using natural gas, and the furnace runs at 2,100 degrees.
2,100.
2,100. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yep.
And you also have something called a glory hold. What's that?
That's a reheating furnace. So you melt the glass in a furnace, and that furnace stays hot 24 hours a day. There's a reheating furnace where you continually return to keep the glass in a molten state, keep it flowing and hot. And that's a different furnace that runs a little bit hotter, but we actually shut that off every evening.
And you got to make sure that the glass remains molten, otherwise you can't work on it anymore.
That's right. There's about 200 pounds of glass in our furnace, and if the furnace shuts off, it'll ruin the furnace. And also, you can't heat up 200 pounds of glass in the morning when you come into work, so it's running constantly right now.
Is this similar to making pottery? There's an annealing oven.
There are similarities in forming. I can't throw a pot to save my life. So you know, the process of doing it is differently, but you know, there are similarities in that you're working on an axis and that heat is involved.
You also have an assortment of blow pipes and other tools. Is this equipment pretty much the same as you would be using up at Corning?
It is, and the amazing thing is that the equipment is the same sorts of things that have been used for 2,000 years. But, yeah, every day in Corning, at the Corning Museum of Glass, we're blowing glass just like we are this weekend on Governor's Island.
And what's the raw ingredient? Is it sand?
It is sand. We use a pure quartz sand called silica to make really nice clear glass.
And there you are working at a furnace that runs over 2,000 degrees. It's been very hot recently.
It has, absolutely.
You don't get air conditioning out there on Governor's Island, do you?
You know, what we tell everybody is that, you know, on a 95-degree day, you feel very hot. Well, when we get off the stage and it's 95 degrees, we feel great because it's been so hot on the stage. But, no, it's been a hot couple of weekends, but the weather's looking up.
Well, we should mention that you're not working alone on these pieces. Does glassblowing require a whole team?
It does. Historically, it has. There are some artists who work solo, but by and large, glassmaking is very much a team effort, and that's really one of the things for a maker that's most rewarding is to work collaboratively to achieve, you know, a singular object.
And it looks like people are anticipating what the next step is and getting ready to take over. So that you don't have to do everything.
Yeah, one of the great stories of the work we've done on Governor's Island is the very first day we were working out there, our team was working together, working very, very well together. And one of the people in the audience said, "How long have you guys worked together? You all look so like you've known each other forever." It had been about 20 minutes, but we are all very good glass artists, so you can pick up and work with anybody as long as you're a good artist
yourself. Do people have specific roles?
Certainly, and those are also defined. Whoever is working at the bench, taking the lead, is called the gaffer, and everyone else kind of knows where to fall into then.
Harry, the museum calls these demonstrations performances. As an artist, do you feel that glassblowing can be considered a performance art as well as a visual one?
Yeah, I think it's as engaging as a performing art, and people are moving, and action is taking place. And it's what, to me, is so interesting about it is I always feel like the production process makes people appreciate design work, the end result. And so, and here they're exposing that, all of the production techniques, and it's fun to watch, and there's an end result, and so yeah, it has all of the qualities of a performance piece.
A listener, Antonio, asks, can green milk glass be made in this manner?
Green milk glass?
How do you get color into the
color in glass? Is made by introducing different metallic compounds to the base material. So all glass is made of silica. You add small amounts of different metallic compounds to achieve different colors. Green is actually made with iron oxide.
Now, you're doing these as performances, so you're letting us see them. Are you actually producing work that has been proposed by people like Harry?
The Corning Museum of Glass is not in the business of producing work to sale or for sale. We're a nonprofit educational institution. We're here to tell the story of glass and teach people about glass, and Glass Lab is an extension of that. We want people to watch the process just to become informed and learn about glass.
This past weekend, the team was working on making a glass buoy designed to look like an eyeball. Was that an especially challenging piece to make?
It was challenging in the scale and complexity of the piece, for sure. It was a piece that I knew we could accomplish. It's comprised of pretty standard glassmaking procedures. But the designer for that was Peter Buchanan Smith. He's a New York-based designer, and it was just fabulous. A lot of fun to collaborate with him.
Now, what's happened to the Steuben factory in Corning? Is that still in operation?
So Steuben has ceased operation. They're no longer in business. But the Steuben factory building, where they've been making glass since 1951, is still on the grounds, the campus of the Corning Museum of Glass. And I'm happy to say that the legacy of handmade glass will live on in that building as the museum has announced an expansion into the Steuben factory space.
A listener points out that there's a glass studio in Brooklyn called Urban glass. So there are other places you can go. You don't have to go to Seattle, Harry, if you want something to be made for you.
Sure. There are small places. Is Urban still?
Urban is in the process of being rebuilt right now. They're going to open with a fabulous new facility, I think, within the year.
Okay, great.
Reopen.
But it's not like finding a woodworker. You mm-hmm. know, there's a lot more that goes into it.
Because it's much more skilled. Oh, well, not that woodworking isn't skilled.
No, it is. It's more rarefied, and it's and also the equipment that's involved and the energy that's involved in order to run a studio is a much bigger deal. So you wouldn't just, you know, open up the Yellow Pages. You probably wouldn't find anything in the Yellow Pages, or maybe one or two listings. So.
And you haven't done a listing in the Yellow Pages.
Right? We like to go where the designers are. You know, that's why we've come to New York City. I'm working with the Kirby Hewitt. We've gone to the Vitra Design Museum over in Germany. We go where the designers are to try to make this sort of rarefied commodity, forming glass, accessible and available to designers.
And it is fascinating to watch. This coming weekend will be your last weekend out there. Do you know what you'll be working on?
We do. We're going to be working with some very exciting designers. Abbott Miller is coming out from Pentagram, a design firm, and also Georgie Stout, one of the founding members of the design firm 2x4.
And how can people find you? Governor's Island is a pretty big island, actually.
It is. We did a good job putting up signage on Governor's Island. As soon as you get off the Brooklyn Ferry, you'll walk right into us practically, and from the Manhattan Ferry, you can walk around the corner and you'll see us there.
Harry, when you give a project to Glassblowers, do you insist on staying around and watching what they do, or is it, here it is, I'll be back next Thursday?
No. With these guys, it's very collaborative. We're up there basically on a stage, and there are a lot of questions and answers. I mean, you learn so much in a factory situation like that as a designer, and it really is a give and take, and it's such an interesting process for me. So I wouldn't really want to leave. And I suspect there are probably glass-blowing places where you would have to hand them a drawing and you wouldn't ever see it again. But with these guys, it's very collaborative.
This is your last weekend. Where do you go after this?
We're actually heading to Nantucket. We're taking the whole glass lab to Nantucket again. We'll be working with Ted Mueling out there and some other glass artists.
Thank you both so much for talking with us about this this incredible, I guess it's performance, that Glass Lab is doing out on Governor's Island Saturdays and Sundays, this Saturday and Sunday being the last ones, the 28th and 29th. Listeners who can't make it out there can watch videos, including videos with you, Harry, and also get a slideshow of some of the other work that's been done. My great thanks to Eric Meek, the glassblower, one of the glassblowers involved, and designer Harry Allen for being on our show today.
Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you.